Welcome to another reality show hosted by Golden Hawk. Join Golden Hawk as she travels down the rabbit hole exploring many of life's mysteries and adventures. Because here at another reality show, we're not afraid to let our imagination soar and our intuition run wild. So relax, get comfortable, because for the next 2 hours, we're inviting you to open your heart, spread your wings, and fly. And now, here's Golden Hawk.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Conversations with Golden Hawk. And yes, I am Golden Hawk. I'm really excited to be here today. I have been on somewhat of a radio sabbatical since last April, going through tremendous changes, tremendous shifting. I mean, pretty much what I'm going to be sharing with my beautiful guest today is the changes that I've been going through. But before we get into this conversation, which I'm very excited about, I just wanted to kind of bring you up to date on some of the logistics about this show and what my intentions are and how kind of this aspect, Conversations with Golden Hawk, came to be. Both of my other shows, Another Reality Show and the Mystical Mother Earth Show, I posted it in the spirituality category. That is not where I am posting this show. This show is in the self-help motivational category, because what I intend on sharing is not necessarily spirituality, new age topics per se. This isn't about selling a healing book. It's not about connecting to any authorities outside of ourselves. You know, the fact that self-help is about really, it's not even, I got a call coming in. I don't know who that is. It doesn't matter. Self-help, it doesn't even really describe it. The part I liked most was the motivation category. So this is about people sharing, myself and my guests, honestly, openly, and vulnerably, where we are in our life and the journey that we got here. Now, I'm telling you, prepare yourself. It's not edited. We're not here to make it look pretty. We're not here to dress it up and, have a conclusion at the end that makes it, oh, okay, that makes it all okay. We're just going to share the raw, authentic truth. Inevitably, the people I have chosen and seem to have chosen me to be here, we are persevering and we are optimistic, but we're realists. We're not painting it up pretty. I can't emphasize that enough. This is just about how it is, and it's raw. It's raw and unadulterated form. So I welcome callers. I ask you to be relatively brief in your shares, because I'm a very concise person. I don't want to have to cut anybody off, but this is part of my journey. if it gets too long and drawn out and off topic, I'm hoping that the people that call in, you're listening to me and my guest, and you have a share that's relevant to what we're speaking of, personally relevant. I absolutely welcome that. And the only other thing I welcome is I want all shares from myself as well as my guest as well as the callers to come in first person. So this is about us revealing the truth of us, and truly embracing our vulnerability as the beautiful aspect being vulnerable really is. Okay, so with all that said, I'm super excited. My guest today is a fabulous lady, sister, soulmate, friend who I met through Facebook account, and we just hit it off right away as soon as we began talking to each other, because she's, in my humble opinion, she's doing the work of self-discovery, and I can't even call it the work in the sense of it's work, but it's a life journey. It's a lifestyle, becoming a sovereign being and breaking free from the controls of the matrix and the indoctrinations of religion and science and education and, you know, basically, you know, everything that the planet is kind of hurling our way, she's doing. She's breaking free from that. And it's very important that I share with everybody that here's the way it is. This is not about me and Patricia speaking about, we don't necessarily agree on everything we share. What we agree on is that we respect each other's voices and the right to speak our truth. We are courteous of not interrupting or cross-talking. We're not here to heal each other and or condemn each other. You know, the template is really just it's cathartic in the experience of just sharing the journey, and then if anybody else feels a resonance with it, you know, it'll help them on their journey. So I get it. I'm dissecting, but it's very important for me because the last two shows I did, another reality show was all about selling fourth dimensional tools. I'm done. I've worked my way through that. I'm done with that. Mystical reality show, Mystical Mother Earth show was all about me sharing my personal journey of integrating my shadow work. Conversations with Golden Hawk is truly about the embracing of vulnerability. So with that said, please help me introduce my beautiful guest, my friend, my soul traveling mate, Patricia Farrington, to the show. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Thank you.
You're welcome. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to be here, and I'm very appreciative that you asked me to have this conversation with you. And I'm definitely not a guru. I am just wanting to share my life experiences and come from a place where when a lot of people want to share their experiences is when they're awakened, when they believe that they are awakened. And what I've discovered is that we are always in the process of becoming aware or awakening, even when we don't realize it, because every experience that we are having is bringing us to that point. Even if it doesn't come out to where you and I are today. If I'm not aware of what I am of currently, I still, every experience that I have is leading me there. And I've always thought about how we come into this reality and we experience it on different levels. So if I look at someone behind, what I would perceive as behind me, I would still see that they're still awakening because their experiences are bringing them to that point. I'm not above them. They're not below me. We're equal. We're traveling on our own paths. And so I'm just thankful for me and this current reality that I'm in and this present life that I'm experiencing, who I am, why I came here, what my purpose is, and understanding that I'm a sovereign being. And that was huge for me because I came from a place, I was born into a place of what would be considered weakness and ignorance and vulnerability that wouldn't be accepted in this current reality. But it is accepted as you're becoming aware of who you are and remembering who you are.
Yeah, that's a good point, right? You know, because I think a great place for us to start, because, you know, I basically posted some major topics that I know in our discussions that we've had privately are what I would call the templates. The templates, the topics that everybody's challenged with. And I think one of the big ones is religion. Because religion is such a, it's a rabbit hole in and of itself. So,
Go ahead.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I think that's a great place to start. So,
okay. Well, for me to bring myself into the religious conversation, I have to give you my background.
Of course,
because I want everyone to understand where I'm coming from and how I got to that point.
Okay.
My mother conceived me as a teenager, and she was raped by a person. And so she was adopted into a very wealthy family. And then she became pregnant with me at the age of 17. And, of course, they wanted her to abort because they had an image. She had a convertible car. She was going away to college. She was supposed to live a lifestyle that they had created for her. Mm-hmm. And then she rebelled against them, not because she loved me or she wanted me, but she was rebelling against the authority. So she continued on with her pregnancy, and that's how I came into being. Okay? I know it's deeper than that, but I'm going to explain it to you on the matrix level, and then I'm going to go into what I see it as in the organic realm.
Okay.
But I have to explain it on the matrix level first.
Okay.
So in my perception, because I wasn't awake, as all these things were being brought to my awareness, I wasn't even aware of any of this. So she then has myself as her child, and so I was abused from my birth up until the age of 16 years old. I was first sexually abused at the age of 4. I always say 5 because that's when I was aware of it, like when I spoke it out. If anybody can remember back to the time when they were a little kid, back in our generation, because I'm 46, almost 47, and you had the little wooden chairs that had the little wicker seat and had a pretty flower design on it, and all the little kids would sit on it, and they were great. It would be sitting in front of a television in a room where my mom was leaving with a man, and she would go off to work, and he would always tell me to come sit with him, and then he would put a pillow over my head, and then he would begin to molest me. When I would explain that to my mom or anyone else, then it became something was wrong with me and I would get beaten.
Wow.
Then my mom would continually physically abuse me, verbally abuse me, and then again I was molested by a woman somewhere in my youth, I don't know the age, and then again raped at 15 years old by another man that was put in my life from my mother, and she would allow this abuse to continue on. She would send me off with him every Saturday pretending like I was helping him put sod on the house. What 16-year-old girl is putting sod in on a house? And so it would be a hotel room every Saturday. So I was brought up with this abuse. So when I speak of this, I don't speak from a victim standpoint on any level. I'm using the language that we have to express experiences here. Not once. And my mom was very physically and verbally abusive, and she would burn me with cigarettes, pull my hair out, slap me, beat me with a belt, punch me, do whatever she needed to do, put me under water, trying to drown me, but not to the point to death. I would miss school days, like 30 days in a month. And today, that would be different. You couldn't do that. But in our generation, that would occur. Even though I don't agree with the school system, it's just that you were in it and nobody even observed that you were being abused.
Right.
And so some people say, she's a victim. She was a victim. I never once in my whole life thought I was a victim. I would evaluate everything that I was experiencing, and I would try to figure out what I was supposed to do next. The word victim, I don't even think I heard that until I was like in my 20s and I started looking at politics.
Mm.
So that's why I was saying when people are talking about how you become enlightened and you become aware of things. I really wasn't in the sense of the New Age or the movement now to where we understand that we're greater than who we are, or who we perceive we are, that I understood that. And so my journey at 16 years old, I ended up out of my home because if I didn't leave, I would be dead. And keep in mind, again, there was no such thing to me as the Matrix, as I'm a sovereign being. It was just I have a mom, I have a stepdad, aunts, uncles, or, you know, whatever. I didn't see it with me being anything other than just that specific experience.
Okay.
And so all I wanted, I could just remember, I just wanted so desperately to have a family. I remember that when I got out at 16 years old, I had my mom that had, and I had two stepsisters. At 7 years old, I was changing diapers and feeding bottles to children because my mom was so out of it. My stepdad basically was controlled by my mother, so he couldn't even do anything. I mean, he would, like, if my mom pulled my hair out, he would collect it in a bag so he could save it in case they got a divorce, they could take it to court. But he wasn't stopping the abuse. He was weak.
Right.
And I'm not judging him. I'm just saying I look at the situation. I'm seeing how everybody played out in these roles. So this will lead up to something really great later.
I know who you are today. I didn't know these details. It just really makes me admire you and respect you all the more. So,
yeah, really. And so that's what I wanted to share today. I didn't want to share it before because I was like, when we would talk about certain things, people are not good with being vulnerable because when you're vulnerable, you're judged because people will say, well, you know, I love unconditionally, but then when you present them with a condition they don't think they can love, all of a sudden they can't love unconditionally.
Right,
you know?
Right. Yeah, no,
so,
definitely.
Yeah, so anyway, so at 16 I was faced with the fact that either I left or I would probably, I was 5'7", probably 135 pounds. My mom was 4'11" and about 98 pounds, and she beat the schnit out of me, and I never touched her.
Mm.
And that's where I think the love and respect aspect of the journey comes in, because I had an awareness all along that's what I was saying when I started out. I had an awareness all along my path already that I was in control, that I was sovereign. Even though I was accepting this abuse, I wasn't a victim. I made a choice. Somehow I knew that, even though I didn't comprehend it. Because other people were like in jail, oh, this guy punched his mom in the face, or this girl did this. You know, I wasn't doing these things. I was accepting it, and I was still catering to her. There was a part of me that feared her, but not to the point that I didn't think I could challenge her if I wanted to. You know, it was just that it was there that I couldn't do this to my mother. And
can I interrupt? I just want to interject for you.
Of course.
I got a question. Okay, so what do you credit that awareness from? Like, can you credit that awareness from, like, did you have a relationship with nature, you know, or someone or some, you know, like, I mean, I grew up abused, but I was scared shitless of everything.
I was scared of everything also. However, even in my fear, and you, I think, I don't know if you're going to agree with this or if this is what you, how your experience went, but everything that I feared, I challenged. Did you?
Only later in life. Yes. No, at this point, but up until 30, oh, my God, I was run by my fear. I mean, just run by it.
Okay, up until 35, I was up until 32, I was run by my life.
I see. Okay,
but this is so significant, though, because we think that we did it. We think we had fear. Yes, we did. we had fear, but if I had a true fear, then I couldn't have left at 16 years old. How many kids leave at 16 years old? My son was struggling at school, and I would lock him out of the house, and he would bust into the door, lock himself in his bedroom, and I'd say, "You're grounded." He's like, "Great, you're grounding me in my bedroom." I went, you know.
Yeah,
he's not that today, but I'm just saying, we are more sovereign than we grasp in the moment.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that. But the key is to have that awareness, even though I also get what you're saying.
You don't have that awareness always.
Well, you don't, and yet, I mean, I can remember being a cocaine addict, and I was the dealer, you know, like, so it was my cocaine most of the time we were snorting.
Right.
And I'd have a big pile on the table and go, okay, tonight, you know, we're all going to snort coke, and everybody was happy, and I went, but let's all talk about why we snort coke. You know, my friends were like, what? What? You know, what the hell you want to talk? You know, what a pathetic conversation that'll be, because they wanted to repeat themselves 100,000 times or whatever story they were. So you're right. I mean, there was a presence about me that was like, well, why are we coke addicts? What is it that makes us do this?
I get that so much, because I used to get so freaking drunk. I never drank alcohol or anything. I didn't do drugs. I didn't drink alcohol or whatever. I went into sales when I was in my late 20s, and I became a very successful telecommunications data sales rep, and I was making money. I was living high. My kids, I could take them out and do all these things and whatever. And I would remember I'd get intoxicated, and because I was religion-based, I'd be intoxicated saying, "I'm so sorry you're homosexual. Let me help you figure out why you're gay."
Oh, God! I'm sure your homosexual friends enjoyed that conversation.
I say that
sarcastically.
You go back to what you think. Like when you get, if you're in that mode, then you go back to how can I help someone?
Of course,
so,
of course.
And I was helping them from where I was at in my, you know, my perspective.
Right. No, indeed.
They're like crazy. Indeed. You get intoxicated and then you tell us to, you know, help ourselves while you're drunk. And I'm like, yeah.
Okay, so, all right, so let's keep focusing, because that was, okay, so, all right, so you're basically 16, you left, and what goes on now?
Okay, so I really had nowhere to go, because the very people that were supporting my mother's ability to abuse me is the only place I had to go, which were an aunt and uncle's home. But they basically allowed me to live in their home, but I was still alone.
Okay.
And I worked 2 and 3 jobs, and I was going to school to a local community college. My whole desire was only to have a family, and that was just what was in me. I don't know why, but it was so much a part of, and, you know, you and I have talked about this before. Now I'm like, what hell are you thinking when you start trying to do all this stuff, because it doesn't make sense. You know, it's a matrix. But all I wanted to do was be a mother, a wife, cook cakes and bake cookies and put roast on the table and all these things. And so I found this person that wanted all the same things. And so we ended up getting married. And he loved me to death, and he was wonderful to me. But because of the sexual abuse that I had encountered when I was a young child, I had endometriosis, and my ovaries were very enlarged. And so we were faced with a decision that we had to either get pregnant now to clear it or maybe possibly never have children at all.
Okay.
So fertility drugs, I got pregnant with twins. And I was very happy, and he was very happy until they were born. And he was great in the delivery. He was great in the first, you know, little bit afterwards. And then all of a sudden, they scream, they poop, they do all the things they do. And he began to abuse my children. And so here I had come from abuse, and I wasn't an abuser. But my husband was. Now, I'm going to tell you something that was, this was huge, and I've shared this with very few people. As much as I wanted to be a mother, I was terrified of having a daughter because of the relationship that I had with my mom.
Right.
So when they were doing an ultrasound, they said, oh, you've got a little girl, and you've got one little girl, you've probably got two, and I started crying. I was like, oh, my gosh.
Right.
I've got a daughter, and I thought I was going to abuse her, I was going to hate her, you know, that
yeah.
I wouldn't to relate to her. And then later they said, oh, well, you've got a boy and a girl.
Hmm.
And I was trying to embrace the whole experience, but I honestly, it didn't matter if it was a boy or a girl. I wasn't raised in love, so I didn't know how to love.
Right.
So when I brought them home, I mean, labor, it was like going to Chuck E. Cheese. I was so excited because I'm having twins. And I was at Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, where there's all these medical students. So I had like 12 doctors all around my bed watching and observing because this lady's having boy-girl twins and everybody's taking
okay.
notes. And so it was a weird, interesting experience. But I wasn't really in pain. I was more worried about, am I going to poop and everybody's going to be watching me poop or, you know, what's going to happen here?
Oh, that's so honest, babe. Right on, right on. Exactly.
But I was so excited about being a mom. And I breastfed both of them, and I brought them home. And I remember that all of a sudden I was like, I don't know how to love. I don't know how to love. I wanted to be a mom. I wanted to be a wife. I wanted to have a family. But what is love? So I started getting really upset with myself, and I would look at my watch, and I would say, because I didn't experience this as a child from a mother or a father.
Hmm.
And I would look at my watch, and I'd say, okay, it's 12 o'clock. So the last time I hugged my twins' name are Casey and Bradley. So I was like, the last time I hugged, and one's a boy and one's a girl, and Casey's the girl, obviously Bradley's the boy, and I was like, well, I hugged Casey at 1 o'clock, so, okay, it's 2 o'clock, I need to hug her again. So I'd go and pick her up and hug her. Because I wanted to make sure she understood what love was. And I did the same with my son. Then if my daughter cried nonstop, my son was silent, but my daughter cried nonstop around the clock. No one could tolerate her, no one other than myself and her grandfather. I would go to the bathroom, I'd get a washcloth, I'd go to a recliner in my living room, and I would beat the crap out of the recliner with the washcloth, and I'd go pick up my daughter. I went to go see a counselor. I said, something's wrong with me. I'm talking about how I hug my children, and I'm beating a recliner so that I can pick up my daughter without killing her. And
which is very right with you. You know, it's not what's wrong with you. That was very right of you.
Well, and she goes, I don't understand why you're here. I said, because I'm crazy. Because I'm beating a recliner, and I'm timing how to hug my children. She said, do you know how many people would have to go to a counselor to figure out how to do that? You're coming
exactly.
to a counselor to figure out why you're doing that.
Right. Right.
And so this is what I'm saying, that your higher self is always in control if you listen. I didn't have aunts, uncles, grandpas, grandmas, mothers, fathers, anyone to count on. It was just me. Because everybody was either as disconnected or screwed up or whatever, that they couldn't offer anything to me. So it was all about me trying to figure out my journey.
Right.
So I didn't have anyone telling me to do these things. And so how would I know? You see, at first I judged myself harshly. Like, what kind of psycho am I that I have to tell them how to hug my child? But I was so aware that my child needed love, even though I didn't experience it.
Exactly.
That I didn't make sure it occurred. Okay, but it didn't register to me then.
Well, you know, the beauty of what you're sharing is really the epitome of what I want this show to be about, and what I want people to become aware of is that, I mean, exactly that we might not know how to do this energy, like that we're living, because I think on some level we're all going through, you know, a great rebirthing, so to speak, right now. The rebirthing of the energy is different. You know, to put a little science into it, where our solar system was 35, 45, 50 years ago and where our solar system is today is we are in a different place in the Milky Way galaxy. And in that movement of our solar system, we experience a different reality.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's like what you went through birthing your children and not knowing what to do, we're all kind of going through as a template right now that,
mm-hmm.
you know, well, how do we live in this reality? Because, you know, if we just look at our own lives, my reflection will tell me, okay, things are not working. Okay, well, I need to understand how it works in order to understand why it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
I can't just look at what's not working and go, oh, I know the answer to that, because the reality itself is different than it was 35 years ago, because the placement of our solar system meant the energy that we experience, literally just what neutrinos and photons
mm-hmm.
and gamma rays and all sorts of things that I don't even have names for really do affect how we interact and interrelate with our reality. So the template is so beautiful because when let me ask you this, when the counselor said to you, you know, you're not crazy, you're here doing what most people come here to learn to do.
Mm-hmm.
Did you trust that you would kind of like figure it out along the way how to be with your children in the best way that you could possibly be, in loving ways?
Actually, I thought she was crazy.
You thought you were crazy because you didn't know how to do it?
She was crazy.
Oh, you thought she was crazy.
I was like, how can I trust the counselor that's telling me that it's okay for me to beat a recliner with a washcloth? How is it okay that I'm timing by a clock how to love my children? Like, I didn't understand what it was like because no one did that to me. I had one experience. I was 2 years old, and I went to my uncle, and I said, I have a memory, and I said, I don't know if it's a dream or if it's real. So I asked him, and I was an adult, and I said, I just remember you and me being in a hotel room somewhere, and I was wearing, like, your T-shirt, and I was sitting on your lap, and you were buttering and putting jelly on a piece of toast for me. And he goes, you remember that? And I said, yeah. He said, you were 2 years old. He said, I had to come and get you because your mom had abandoned you, and you were alone in a house with no food, no whatever.
Right.
And I remember that, and I said, well, then it made sense to me because I was like, well, that must have been the first feeling of love that I had ever experienced.
Right.
Why would you remember that at 2 years old? When science says you don't have a memory until you're 3 or 4.
First of all, just for the record, science is not the facts we think it is. I just need to throw that out there.
Yeah.
You know, science is much an indoctrinated belief as religion, as all the education that, you know, in other words, science wants us to be in nice little tidy boxes and doesn't want critical thinking and doesn't want, you know, the whole idea of us to remember ourselves fully. So science will tell us you can't remember it at 2 years old. I mean, because, you know, I mean, we have a mutual friend, George Kavassalis, who remembers lifetimes 12,000 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
All this is leading up for me in my life, in this particular lifetime, into a religious movement. You know. And,
yes.
But, you know, you stop me whenever you need to. Because I'm a motor mouth.
If I'm interrupting too much, I'm sorry.
No. I mean, you just tell me to be quiet and talk because
but I don't want you to be quiet. It's an interaction. I'm just, you know what I'm the sidebar that I want people, like, this is, when you speak, it's just like when we're talking privately. It's like, okay, so this makes sense to me. And I tend to point out, like, the directors. Like if you're reading from the play, I'm doing the screenplay going, okay, and she walks up and gets some tea and, you know, gets the jelly from the toast. You know,
right.
It's just the nature of that's how I see the reality, so that's how I share it. So,
Well, to me, this part seems so boring because it was like me just becoming, this is like me as a kid, you know, starting to figure things out, and then all of a sudden, hello, I'm a mom, I've got children, And then I've got a third child. I had a pregnancy where, you know, with my twins I just, you know, shared. And then I had a daughter that came after the fact.
Mm.
And I didn't know I was pregnant with her until I was 4 months pregnant. I wasn't planning on another child. I'd had issues because of my sexual issues, you know, in the past. So
right.
it wasn't that I thought I could just easily get pregnant.
Right,
but I
right.
was 4 months pregnant, and I at first was kind of upset because my marriage was not going so well because the way the father was treating my kids, he was perfect to me, but he was very abusive to the kids because they were interfering with the relationship that he and I had.
Okay.
And this daughter lives for 5 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Now, this is where my knowing comes in, and this is what, and I've had this my whole life, but you have to, if I, when I express what came after the fact with religion, you'll understand the journey that I've taken.
Okay.
So she comes in, and I'm thinking the whole time, you know, like, oh, I've got twins, I'm going to get a divorce because I'm not going to let him do this to my kids, and all of a sudden, wow, why am I pregnant when I, that shouldn't be the case. She dies at 5 weeks old after her birth. And so
okay.
I went into this immediate judgment of myself that I got excited later in my pregnancy just because I was a mom and my baby was in my stomach and I knew she was coming. And as a mother, you, at first, if you're not happy with your pregnancy, but you love your children and you have that mindset that you want to be a mom, then of course you're going to be happy. Okay, at first I wasn't expecting this, but this is my child, so I'm going to love it and I'm excited. So I started playing in the nursery and getting excited. She died, and so I went into this immediate judgment. She died because I didn't want her, because I wanted the divorce, because I was trying to break free from this relationship. So I was in a deep, dark place.
Yeah.
And guess who showed up?
Religion?
Religion. This, and I didn't grow up in religion. Now, my mom was not religious. My mom was into witchcraft or into herself. My stepfather was a former, in America we say Muslim, but in their country they say Muslim. He was from Afghanistan.
Okay.
And he didn't get to share any of that or practice any of it because he wasn't.
Okay.
And so I wasn't exposed to Christianity or to Islam or anything other than somebody taking me to a little, what's called an Awanas class on a Wednesday night at a church where you could play games. It wasn't anything major. And it
okay.
was like a couple times in my life. So anyway, my daughter dies, and I'm just completely devastated. I don't even know what to do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this person that I have no clue who he is, I have a dream. And that's why I always say dream. To me, the dreamland is not it's not anything that's not real. It's either teaching you something or it's you in another reality. And I don't see it as like I ate pizza and now I'm having a bad dream or a good dream or whatever. I do really see that as either teaching you something or you're seeing yourself in your other realities because they're too important to ignore.
I agree.
So she dies, and I'm having a dream where I see her, and I'm so excited. And I don't know Jesus, and I don't know Allah, and I don't know Buddha, and I don't know Krishna, and I don't know any of these guys, really. But this hand, these two hands, when I'm seeing her up above me, and she's coming to me, and there's this beautiful sun and the clouds and whatever, and these two hands just clap shut and say, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven because you want to see your daughter. It will be because you love me. And all of a sudden, there was this fire in the sky.
Oh, like, what the wow.
heck? Right. And so, now, you have to understand, looking back then, I didn't have any clue as to what I know today.
Of course.
And so I had a woman that I was working with because I was working in an orthopedic doctor's office, and she was like you need to talk to my pastor. And all of a sudden, this pastor starts talking to me about Jesus and all this other stuff. And so then I'm like, oh, this is Jesus. This being that wants to be your guide, he seizes the moment. Somebody will say, like, a child predator will look up for the child that came from an abusive home, and they'll just, you know, dive in on them.
Pray on them, definitely.
I would say the same thing about the being that wants to be the God over everyone. If you're weak, you're a really great target.
Absolutely.
And right. And still, again, I'm not saying I'm a victim. I'm just going through the scenarios in my life without being a victim.
No, and I'm telling you, your energy, I've never in all the conversations we've had ever felt victim from you. I it's one of the things that, you know, I relate with you the most.
Oh, great. And thank you, because yeah. I've never felt like that. I mean, I really didn't.
I believe
never,
you, because it's energetically in your truth. Yes, it's in your shares. So.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
And so what started occurring is this whole God-Satan battle in my life that I didn't even comprehend. So I didn't experience this alone, and I always said thank you that I didn't experience these things alone, because people would have thought I was crazy, especially coming from the childhood that I'd experienced.
Right.
My house was filled with worms after my daughter's death. I had picture frames that were being with my family that had, like, crosses from, like, broken glass with crosses from, like, the destruction of your family and things like that.
Well,
see, what I don't believe is I don't believe that there's a heaven and a hell. Literally, like an eternal heaven and an eternal hell. I think that's what was trying to be presented to me to get me to go into Christianity, which it did.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I was being presented with, oh, here's this evil Satan figure, and here's this great God figure, and God's going to save you while Satan's trying to destroy you. And we were having, like, all these tones, like volume sounds in our home. This black entity came over my bed, and he held me down, held me to where I couldn't breathe, I couldn't speak, I couldn't do anything, and I just kept telling him to release me, to release me, to release me, and finally he did.
Wow.
The next day I go to work, my husband, which is my first husband, not my husband now, my twin's father, called me, and he had left. He'd gone to his parents' house because the same thing had occurred to him.
On the same night?
That happened to him in the morning.
Okay.
And so we ended up getting a pastor to come out and do the whole cleansing process of the house, and guess what? Never again, another occurrence.
Okay.
So we were being lured in to this God, this being that wants to be God over us. He played out everything that needed to be played out for us to believe him. Okay, our daughter dies. Guess what? Jesus is coming to save you.
Okay.
Oh, Satan's going to try to attack you. Now we're going to heal your home. It all went down. It just all perfectly.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. I wasn't reading the Bible. I didn't know who Jesus was specifically. I didn't understand anything. So, okay, finally, okay, I'm supposed to be a Christian. The only reason I knew this person that was coming to me would be Jesus is because a pastor told me it was Jesus. Not because, I guess if I had been in Iran or somewhere, it would have been Muhammad or Allah.
Right.
But because I'm in America, he's presented as Jesus.
Right.
So that's where I go. So I'm like, okay, fine. Jesus, this is my spiritual now experience. So, okay, I got to go read the book. So I go read the book. I'm getting all excited. I'm looking at all this stuff. They always tell you to go to the New Testament. Of course they're going to say to go to the New Testament, because that's where Jesus comes in. If you go to the Hebrew version, that would be what they call the Tanakh, which would be their whole scriptures, or the Torah would be their first five books. So I started reading. I'm like, great. But for me, that doesn't work because I'm a seeker always. So I'm like, I'll start at John. Okay, so for God so loved the world that he sent his only begotten son, that whosoever should believe will be saved. Great, I believe I'm saved. Great. And that's not good enough for me. So I'm like, no, I'm going to read the Bible from the beginning to the end. So the Christian text hijacked the Hebrew text, converted them into the English language the way they wanted it to be communicated to us. And all of a sudden, I'm looking and I'm like, wait a minute. There is no Sunday worship, because I go to the Ten Commandments just alone. There's more than Ten Commandments. But if I just go to the Ten Commandments, then we have a Sabbath, which is a Shabbat to the Jews, which is Friday night to Saturday night. But because Jesus was resurrected on a Sunday, all of a sudden now we're worshiping in church on Sunday.
Mm.
Wait a minute. These are the Ten Commandments that can never be changed. These are written in stone, people. They can't be changed. Oh, but Jesus resurrected on Sunday. It got changed, but nowhere in text does it ever say that.
Mm.
So, and that's just a little piece of the puzzle. And then you start, if you actually, I went through and I learned Hebrew. I took Hebrew classes. I started looking at everything. And all of a sudden, my Christianity's falling apart, because this is what's saving me. This is what's keeping me alive. This is what's telling me I have a purpose in life, that I wasn't just this abused kid from my mom trying to figure out how to, you know, survive in life. But it was that this God figure that I thought had reached out to me wasn't even the person that I thought it would be. So when I came across George Kavassalis, I had already taken my religion and torn it apart. I had gone from Christianity into a hybrid version of, I'm kind of messianic. I'm believing in no longer a Jesus, but I'm going to go with a Hebrew term and say Yeshua. And
okay.
Then I'm going to say, no, there's no Yeshua either. It's just the Torah. It's just Judaism. And what you start to figure out is these two books, if you look at the Jewish scriptures that's not the Torah, and you compare them with the Christian New Testament, they have nothing in common, however they got connected together. And that baffles me now.
Mm.
And so everything in my religious beliefs were falling apart. So I'm straight 100% with George. There was no Jesus figure that, I mean, I've looked at it. It was a recreation of Zeus, Krishna, Horus, the whole thing. There was an anointed person, yes. But if you say, like, if you say Jesus Christ the anointed, you're saying Jesus anointed the anointed, because anointing is, when you say Jesus Christ, Christ means anointed. And I was looking at just, like, the different things that would come up in religion and the conversations that people were having. I'm like, they don't even make sense. I don't even know what they're saying. Jesus anointed the anointed. They're saying Jesus Christ the anointed.
Mm.
Because anointed in Hebrew is Mashiach. Okay, Mashiach is Messiah. Well, Jesus didn't meet one single criteria of a Jewish Messiah, or what they would call Mashiach. So I was getting totally destroyed in everything that I believed in. And then I started listening to a man named Jordan Maxwell, who was talking about how so many of the biblical references were actually to astrology, to the sun, to the moon, to the stars, to all the things that would be considered the woo-woo stuff that we're not supposed to even look at, because it's magical, it's mysterious, and it goes outside the realm of religion, so we have to avoid that.
Well, that's the pagan aspect.
Yeah. Well, and so everything was turned upside down, and I didn't really know where to go, so I went to New Age stuff.
Well,
and
let me ask you a question, though. Before you go on with the journey, and I want to hear, but when you first recognize that, you know, okay, the religious of the books of the Bible and the Judaism, and that it wasn't making sense, so what were you feeling at that point?
Okay, well, I learned that there were 30,000 different, 30,000 different books of Luke that didn't match.
Okay.
I was learning that the people that the books were in, the names that were written on the books or the letters or whatever you want to call them, weren't even the people that wrote them. I was getting a little bit angry. But when, at the end of the day, when, Ask me that question one more time.
Well, what were you feeling when the whole template of religion started falling apart? In other words, were you vulnerable? And you said it. You started saying, "Okay, you were angry." So the vulnerability really turned into, "Well, I got to find this out. What the hell does this? What is this confusion? Is it a lie? And am I being lied to? Is that what's motivating you at that point?"
No, well, actually, and this is where I differ from a lot of my other relationships that I have with people was they were angry because they would say, well, religion lied to me, religion did this to
right.
me, religion did that to me, and I would go, no, religion didn't do anything to me. I do know that the entity behind, the being behind the Yahweh figure, the Jehovah, the Jesus, the Allah, the Muhammad, whatever you want to call it, Buddha, whatever, I do realize that being's there, that he doesn't force you. You have to accept it. You have to be willing. And that's why I say, when people start talking about us being in a prison planet or that we're slaves,
right.
I highly disagree.
I disagree with that as well, yes.
I disagree 100%. I'm saying that only based on my experiences. Because any time that I've taken a paradigm that exists and I've challenged it, it vanishes. So if I'm not sovereign and I'm a slave, that wouldn't occur. I knock
right.
it down every time that I acknowledge what it is. So when I looked at myself and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to go dip. I never looked at, oh, my gosh, Christianity deceived me, Judaism deceived me. I was like, oh, no, I'm going to keep finding the truth. I'm going to keep looking. What
right.
I began to realize is that everybody's beating each other up with their truths. Oh, well, this book says this. This writing says this. This tablet says this. And what is your truth? What is your truth? Your truth has to come from your experiences and your knowing. I can't tell you. I can tell you that I'm a creator, and I know this because I've observed how I function in my life. I can tell you I'm sovereign because there's never been a time when I felt like I would say the words, I can't. That never occurred to me until someone said, well, I can't. I'm like, what do you mean you can't? I came out of the situation that I came out of never even thinking of the word victim, never thinking of the word I can't, never thinking of anything other than, well, this is what I have to do next. Okay, this is what I have to do next. Oh, this is where I'm going. This is my path. This is my journey. So if you choose to be a victim, sure, you're a victim. If you believe you're trapped, yes, you're trapped.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe you're on a prison planet, you're in prison. It's your belief system. Is there an organic planet? Yes. Is there a prison on the planet? Yeah, there's a prison on the planet. It's not a prison planet. It's different.
No, and I agree with that. I mean, and there's definitely, it's funny because I see a lot of people in prison, and they're living in million-dollar homes, wearing, the latest whatever couture, and it's like prison doesn't just mean behind bars. Prison is a limited belief system, no matter how you slice it, dice it, or serve it up. But I want to ask you something. I want to go back because something came up for me, and I think it's important because I believe again it's part of the template. Like, see, in listening to your share, I believe that you came into this lifetime, like there is this natural gift of not being a victim. Like in other words, you didn't have to try to not be a victim. It was just like in your experiences of the abuse, of the deception of the religions, because you weren't going into victim consciousness, it's like your natural gift now becomes the sharing of how you got through it. And see, in my humble opinion, like my natural gift is that playing with the darkness doesn't make me feel bad. Like I'm okay to play. I was consciously going while we were all doing coke. Hey, let's talk about why we're all degenerates here. Like, because it just didn't occur to me that that it was a bad thing. That in other words, I didn't have shame around it. Now I've had shame in my life, but I didn't have shame around the things I did dark, and I believe that in that gift of not having shame, I've come to the space I've come to today where I can talk about the shame of molestation or the shame of being a drug addict to help other people kind of understand, well, you know, well, you might be a drug addict not of cocaine. You might be a drug addict of you know, antidepressants. You know, it can be legal. And people, because I've heard people say, well, you know, I'm not doing illegal drugs. It's like, but if you're addicted, it's still running your life, you know.
Well, but here's the thing, though. But I agree with what you're saying. We haven't even touched on those aspects of my journey yet.
Okay.
Because I'm trying to let people know who I am as a person and how I got to my belief systems, like in through religion, and then how I got out of religion. And all along the way, just because I went into religion doesn't mean that I didn't walk a shady path. Because when you're trying to live religion, you're always hiding who you really are because you can never meet up to those expectations. And it's kind of like when people say, well, you have to do this and you have to do that, and this is the only way you're going to achieve this. And this, you know, you can't do that because no one's ever going to be 100%. You're never going to be 100%.
Right. I didn't even think of that.
Another.
Right. No, that's interesting, too, because from an outside point of view, like I've never really got caught into the religion thing. But when I witness the religion, what comes up for me is they're very closely tied to the mafia.
Well, yeah, but you have to, the New Age stuff is, too. When someone tells you have to acquire something or achieve something to be somebody, you're being judged. So you can't judge religion unless you're willing to judge the fact that you're judging. I want to give you one scripture that I thought was really interesting. When I first came out of it, and I was like, this is so awesome to me. And I'm not going to read you the whole scripture because it goes, this is where I always say there's gold nuggets. And then they turn it into, you have to go back and worship the deity person. But this is how it starts out. A great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun, with the moon under her feet and a crown of 12 stars on her head. She was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Okay? That is Mother Earth and the sun. The moon being defeated, which is the religious military complex going on this planet, being defeated. All of a sudden it comes in, whoop, the God comes in and he destroys that. But I was like, that is one of those scriptures where you see the woman with the sun clothed in righteousness, and then the dragon comes in to swoop her. So you can see that there's definitely this
Well, there's an acknowledgement of the divine feminine in that.
Yes, exactly.
The whole presence of that. So what book does that come from?
That's in Revelation. Like, that's when everything's coming to an end. When everything's coming to, like, the rebirthing process. There's a woman in labor. How significant. We're supposed to be seeing the Messiah return, a man God, supposedly. What they're trying to say, she's going to give birth to the man God, but she's not really giving birth to a man God. That's what it's being portrayed as.
Right.
But they're acknowledging who she is, that she's in labor, and that she is birthing these significant beings, and that's trying to be stopped.
Right.
And then they turn it right back to the Yahweh figure, or Jesus.
Okay, see, then this is where I get lost, because it's not, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? I have never studied it, so.
That was huge for me coming out of religion and listening to what I was hearing. I was like, holy crap, I mean, this is it. There are so many little, like, in the Bible, it'll say, from dust you came and to dust you return.
Okay.
Well, okay, we came from stardust and from stardust. We came from stardust and to stardust we'll return. They want you to think you came from the dust of the ground. Right? But it doesn't matter.
Well, let me segue on that. Do you feel complete with the religious share?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I feel like that. Here's what I will say about the religious share. The religious share is that it serves a purpose in your life. When people say it's a paradigm and it's, you know, it's to trap you. Nothing can trap you because you're a sovereign being. You choose
right.
to experience that because you want to. You
right.
always, and I've experienced this in my own life, you always agree to the terms, and you always have the ability to leave. It's all based on how you want to live your experience. So it's a paradigm that exists, and it's really up to us to embrace it, experience it, and then release it. That's what
right
I
on. Right on. I resonate with that template. because I got another segue that I really want to talk about.
Okay,
I want
sure.
to segue into a new topic. I can see the correlation that I have with it and with religion playing its part. And the topic I want to talk about is death.
Okay.
And I don't know if we've even talked about this privately. We haven't. Okay. Are you comfortable talking about, you know, this is not about having the right answers. These are all, you know, because clearly the way to have the knowingness is unless you, you know, have basically flatlined, and some people have. I mean, a dear friend of mine has, who's listening right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Susan. so, you know, I'm not saying there aren't people that truly know, but I have some ideas about death and that are templates that apply what you just applied to the religious paradigm. I
mm-hmm.
want to try to bring some insights into the, you know, for lack of a better word, the death paradigm.
Okay.
So you want me to, I'll start the share. I'll start the share.
Yeah,
you know, if you have questions
share.
No. But it was a wonderful share. You speak, you're a great storyteller, Patricia. Really, you give good radio, babe.
I feel like a moron.
No. This is you're very concise, and you keep a story flowing. That's the key to good storytelling. The story's got to keep flowing. I tend to get stuck in eddies of details, like I'm doing right now. So okay, so
I love details, though. I thought
well, it's a good dance then.
Yeah,
well, the two of us, right? It's a good dance. So, okay, so for me, like I said, I didn't get into religion, but from what I witnessed from religion was that people needed group consciousness in order to feel the things that they weren't generating for themselves just inside themselves. You know, the appreciation, you know, the whole service to others, which I understand it, but this is taking that service to others to a level that, so what, I couldn't achieve my goal without being service to others? Because I tend to do things, what they call heyoka, which is, it's a backwards, upside down, trickster kind of way of being. Okay, so my application of death. I've studying death for, I'd say, like the last decade. I have never flatlined, but I've done significant amounts of drugs where I have clearly had, you know, heart experiences, lack of sleep for, you know, 5 days at a time, and I've gone lucid in my dreaming.
Okay.
What I got from death is that, like, if most people, if I just, here, and I'll just ask you, let me just ask you this question. When you die, is the first thing you're going to do is go towards the light?
No.
See, well, I love it. That does not surprise me that you're saying that, because nor will I. And in my understanding of fourth dimensional parasitical beings, I acquired that understanding through understanding mind control and metaphysical paranormal experiences, I totally get the sense for myself that there's two paradigms that are heavily in the propaganda of death. One is
mm-hmm.
going towards the light. The other is that your loved ones will come to greet you and take you to the other side. I mean, I've seen it in stories of hospice nurses and people. I didn't get that from my own mother when she died, but you can just tell it's a repetitive story. The family comes to get you, and you go towards the light. Now, what mm-hmm. I have come to my own understanding about this death, which is the same applicable sovereignty, is that ultimately when I die, I don't need a group. I don't need my family. I don't need a deity. I don't even need, quote unquote, the light to get me where I'm going. What I need one thing, and that one thing I need is connect me to my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Because from what I've got in my understanding through listening to other people and just doing my own kind of research, is that there are beings out there that if we go into the light and we go into this paradigm where they're going to take you and sit you down with the Akashic Records and they're going to go over all your experiences and whatever you did wrong, they're going to say, okay, well, you need to go back into body and you need to make better choices next time. Here's your chance. Make better choices. What they're not promoting, which is critical, is that you don't reconnect with your soul, which is the aspect of ourselves that knows our full journey. This body needs to check in with soul body, give all the accurate to my soul, not to quote unquote a judgmental or some sort of higher being that says, okay, let's take you back and look at, you know, come with me to the Akashic Records. Like, I couldn't find the Akashic Records on my own. I can find anything I want anywhere in the universe because I know the power of intent. The power of intent is very powerful when we're out of body, but it really holds the same power when we're in body, which is what this whole hijacking, in my humble opinion, of religion and what happens to us when we die is about. Because if we're not first saying, let's connect to our soul, we can be diverted on a path that essentially what it does is, if you've been recycled into the third dimensional platform of coming into a body, let's just say 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, you know, like anything it's like cloning, people that clone plants. You start getting that after a while, the plant starts degrading because it's just a clone of it. It what is it missing? The essence of what it is. And I think, in my humble opinion, a lot of people that are misled, or not misled, or easily led down these deceptive paths are because even in death, they're not renewing their own juice of essence of self. Why? Because the propaganda goes, go towards the light and wait for your family members. And these fourth dimensional parasitical beings, they can show up as Jesus, they can show up as your own mother, they can show up of whatever it is that you feel safe and comforted by. And what I'm practicing literally in my world is that every night before I go to bed, because I've always heard, well, I haven't always heard, but I heard that when we dream, that's exactly what death will be. It'll feel the exact same way that it feels when we dream. The only difference with dreaming and death is we come back into the body when we're done dreaming. When we die, the silver cord will be cut. You won't come back into body, so you'll be in an eternal dream state, so to speak. So every night before I go to sleep, I'm like, what's my intention? Connect with my soul.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel if I'm practicing this now, I'm somewhat prepared that, you know, first of all, I'm not afraid to talk about death. Second of all, I'm not afraid to look at my own immortality. You ever talk to people like, you know, so how do you feel about your death? Oh, don't talk about it. I can't, oh my God, I can't talk about it. It's like, you know, as if it's something that they're surprised is going to happen. It's like, hello, we're all going to die. I say, talk about it. Or with children, when you know, the beloved pet dies and they go, oh, it just went to sleep. And then the kids at night are afraid to go to sleep. Why? Because the pet died and you're telling them they went to mm-hmm. sleep. You know, it's like, why not just address it for what it is? Because what it is really quite beautiful. But I wanted to share that because, see, for me, it's under the same propaganda. Like when you said that you were truly vulnerable after your daughter died, and I've never had children, so I couldn't even comprehend losing a child. I can only comprehend that I lost my mother, and it just devastated me. I couldn't breathe for 6 months. I mean, and see, intuitively, what I did after my mother died is I stopped doing coke, I stopped drinking, and I stopped having sex, mm-hmm. which were three of my major addictions. Mm-hmm. And because I literally said to myself, I have to be sober so I know when this pain is genuinely gone. If I'm not sober, I won't know if it's the pain of something else because I didn't deal with it head on. I have to deal with this head on. So I removed all my little play toys that were distractions and non-feelings and went into the deepest, darkest pain I've ever been in, which, of course, is not an element for a parasitical being to say, okay, she's vulnerable. You know, I was vulnerable. Pardon?
Go ahead.
No, please share. I don't want to I don't want to lecture. I say that because I didn't know I was doing that at the time. God knows, when my mom died, I was 5 years basically clean of the coke, but I was still mm-hmm. doing it periodically recreationally.
I think you're judging yourself because I want to say this to you, and I want to express this because I think this is so critically important.
Please, I'm in.
We all experience it differently. My mom died in 2000. Now, my mom was my abuser, okay? So my relationship with my mother is totally different than yours.
Okay.
And I was, because of my sexual abuse and stuff that we haven't touched on today, and maybe we'll touch on it another time,
okay.
I was extremely sexually active, and I had a lot of other life experiences that we'll share another time.
Okay,
but I'm
going right to
focus on what you just said, and that is, I had sober, I could not heal. I had met my husband at a time after my mother's death, and my husband and I are total opposites. However, we come together and we work very well together.
Okay.
And I would have to get intoxicated, and I mean intoxicated to the point of I could hurt him physically, verbally, emotionally, the whole thing.
Okay.
Working out, sorting through the sexual abuse that I had experienced as a child and the relationship that I had with my mom and all the pain that I never had. When people say forgive and forget, that doesn't compute to me. I used to go through the language, I guess, with people to try to say, okay, well, I'll forgive and but I won't forget. And I'm thinking, well, how do you forgive and you don't forget? Because as long as you can remember, how do you forgive it? Because it hurts. It doesn't make sense to me. It's more about coming into acceptance and acknowledging the experience and healing from the experiences versus just saying, I forgive and forget. That doesn't make sense
right
to
on.
Me.
I agree. Well, the forgiveness is the result of the acceptance.
Yeah, it's just, right, but you don't, it's like forgive and forget. To me, those are kind of like those are like propaganda words, too, to me. It's
kind
of like a movement.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Anyway, so what occurred for me was that it was months and months of my husband having to watch me get intoxicated night after night after night after night to talk through my pain, cry, and release it. And he would tell me the next day. I wouldn't remember.
Oh, wow.
And he would tell me everything, and we would talk through it after the fact. He would tell me the things that I said when I was intoxicated that I would never be able to tell him sober, that I couldn't have.
Yeah.
But because I had told him intoxicated, then we could talk about it sober. And through my relationship with my husband, I healed with my relationship from the child abuse of my mom.
Okay, no, right on. And you're absolutely right that I was judging it. Because, see, I guess for me, because...
Not judging it like in a bad way.
No, and I didn't feel you were judging it.
Yeah.
I was judging it thinking that if you're fucked up. See, because when I was on the drugs, I did the drugs not to feel. You did the alcohol to feel.
Exactly. And I didn't
See, so the vulnerability truth here is ultimately the key. You have to feel. It doesn't matter what is the channel from which we feel individually is a private and personal thing, and we all know whatever it is we need to do to feel. We do. I think, you know, when people, I almost everybody listening to the show, whether live or on the archive, I ask you to ask yourself, do you know what it is that takes, you know, what it takes for you to feel, and do you know what it is that you do to not feel?
Right.
Because that awareness.
Sober, I can easily disconnect. Soberly, I can go back into the childhood experience to where I was taught to become numb, to where I could stand up and I'm 5'7", 135 pounds. My mom's 4'11" and 98 pounds. She's beating the schnit out of me, and I have no emotion anymore because the emotion's gone.
Right. No,
now
right
on. I'm numb.
No, Patricia, that is such a great point to bring out. And again, it really is. I'm enjoying this. You know, definitely. I have no problem. I want this kind of dialogue on radio where it's in the disagreement that the wisdom is being shared. Because for the longest time on radio, I can only interview people I completely agree with, or I can't interview people anymore. I mean, I've literally, my pendulum swung to the, you know, both extremes. And the truth is where I am now is I think, you know, really informative, good vibration radio is about, you know, kind of getting in there sparring with people and to be quite honest, you can't offend me because whatever you're going to share, I respect you as a person. The only people I want to have on the show are the people that I respect as people. So meaning if there is a disagreement, okay, God, that's totally okay. You know, I'm not looking for everybody to follow my every single word. There was a time I was looking for that, but that is not what Conversations with Golden Hawk is about. You know, this is really about my own journey of being vulnerable, saying, wow, I did not think of that, that, you know, some people might need the alcohol to soften themselves up to feel, because the armor of their lives is not letting them feel.
And
because my armor was the drugs and alcohol, so I had to get sober to get soft.
Yeah, and so I'm saying to you, like, the first time that I really started embracing alcohol was at 35 years old.
Right.
And so, like, you may have experienced it at a younger age. And so this is where we get it. We're not in disagreement. It's that we're actually coming to an awareness of understanding one another's journey where we go, wait a minute. You know what?
Exactly.
This was my belief system because I judged myself.
Right. That's it. No, exactly. That is, I mean, and that's what you said too. You're like, Goldie, you're judging. And it's like, what's so interesting to me is how there is this like blind spot in our ability. Well, in my ability to see when I'm judging. I can see it on some level when I'm, I didn't see that because I just assumed drugs and alcohol would make everybody not feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's simply not the truth.
Mm-mm.
You know?
Because some of us were so, like at 7 years old, I was having to feed a newborn child. I was having to change her diaper. I was having to cook her meals. I was having to take care of my mother at seven. That doesn't even sound reasonable in the environment we live in. But if you go to another country where you could go to other countries that are not in the Western culture, and you would see that a 12-year-old is like a 30-year-old here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just depends on how you grow up. Well, I just,
right.
I wasn't allowed to feel. Number one, I wasn't allowed to show emotion because I was getting beat so much that if I showed emotion, I got beat more. So what would occur is that you start to, when something hurts, then you start to hide that emotion because every time you show that emotion, you get beat more. Then when all of a sudden you stop showing the emotion, now all of a sudden, oh, they're really pissed off then because now, wait a minute, you're not crying anymore. Oh, you want more? Well, if you want to, go ahead. I've caught the
right.
emotion.
Right, right. No, right on.
You see?
Wow. Yeah.
So that's where I feel like when people say, well, someone turned to alcohol or marijuana or whatever it is they turn to, a lot of people, you may get to the point to where you're addicted to something, to the point to where you can't function in society, which that may be where you're taking it to the extreme, but still, it's still a path that you have to take to get to the point to where you say, okay, this isn't what I want. But for some people, you have to take that path to open yourself up. So when someone says, well, they're just a drunk or they're just a pothead or, you know, they're uptight or whatever the scenario is, you don't know where they came from. You don't know why that exists. It's not your fault.
Right.
It's not your path. It wasn't your life experience. It's theirs.
Yeah.
And so they're expressing themselves the only way they know how to.
Yeah, no, definitely. Definitely. I mean, I see in my own journey, the more accepting I am of other people's journeys,
mm-hmm.
the truth is, the more accepting I am of my own. You know,
right.
So
I was saying to you earlier, I wasn't trying to justify what I was doing.
Oh,
what
no,
I
didn't feel that at all. No.
Yeah,
I did not feel that at all.
Yeah, now I was trying to say to you, don't judge yourself.
Yeah, no, well, to be honest, I'm just, I have another one of my, like, whatever the gift of this lifetime,
mm-hmm.
I never feel guilty.
Good.
I don't experience guilt. And, yeah, I mean, I've seen it, you know, I've kind of, it's like I'll dip my toe in, and as soon as I realize what the guilt is, that it's kind of controlling my behavior based on what other people are thinking, I just have an awareness that comes over me and go, okay, Goldie, what do you want to do? And the truth is, okay, you're going to do this. It's probably going to piss off this person. But I do it anyways because, like I said, this it's just not a stream of consciousness, you know, that's really plagued me in this lifetime, which, again, is helpful to dance in my shadows because the shadow is such a dark place. You know, it's like, if you're going to go to a dark place and then feel bad about how it's going to piss other people off in your, you know, in your circles in your life, then more than likely you wouldn't go to those dark places. You know, if you're a people pleaser or something to that effect.
And I've always been myself as far as when I talk to people, they'll say, you're just blunt. You're just too blunt. And that's offensive. But I was blunt because if you asked me a question, I wanted to give you an honest answer. However,
okay.
You wanted to get to know me and come into my inner circle, I was a little bit more protective of who I am because if someone said, for example, and I think I know I did share this with you, when I was younger, I was physically very attractive, and I didn't comprehend that because of everything that had gone on in my life. I didn't see that, so if someone gave me a compliment, I felt like they were making fun of me.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really see it. And,
yeah.
But I knew that I had this ability to do anything that I wanted to do. I never, ever, ever felt like I couldn't be who I wanted to be. I never felt like camp was a part of my vocabulary.
Yeah.
And I don't know, so I would say, like, I didn't know where that came from at the time. And I always go back to whatever we're going through. The one thing that I just will be perfectly honest with as far as, like, when it comes to people that we both love and admire, I don't know that I created every event in this journey because I don't know that. It's not something I have a knowing knowledge of. I know that I'm a creator. I know that I'm sovereign. I see that. I don't know that if I came here to experience the creation and I'm creating as I go or if I truly created every moment in the experience. And that's where, like, if you were to ask me where my deepest questions are at this moment, that would be it, because it's hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that I created what I didn't know.
Okay. Yeah, no. Okay. Right. No, I feel that. I mean, and it's funny, when I feel that, I tell you, I can actually feel it twisting my mind.
Okay.
You know, that I created what I don't know. It's like, I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel you know that your soul? Are you connected to your soul, or
yeah.
Can you share, like, how would you describe that? Can you articulate that? I know it's hard, so.
I've had knowings my whole life. I've had an awareness of certain events in my life, of the way things were going to be, of situations that were going to occur. I was always aware that I had a purpose that existed beyond this. I can remember when I was a little girl, and I was telling this to my husband one time. He goes, well, not the man in the moon. I said, no, not the man in the moon, but I knew that there were people in the moon. I was a little kid, and I was riding down the road in cars always, and I would look, and I would know that there were people in the moon and that they were watching us. I just knew it.
Okay.
And I was very aware of that, and I could not take my eyes off the moon, because it wasn't like a comforting thing, and it wasn't necessarily a negative thing. It was just like an awareness thing. Like, I knew they were there.
Okay.
And then I would also look into people's, like, if I was looking at a house, and I'm like, if I'm not in that house across the street, if I'm not there, how do they exist? Like, how can they be experiencing life if I'm not there to watch it?
Okay.
And I was, like, probably 6 or 7 when I was thinking that.
Wow.
And it wasn't that their reality wasn't real. It was that I was aware that we were creating different realities. But
yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah,
And so I had an awareness of different things, but as I got older, and as this being that wants to be the God over us all was starting to approach me, I started feeling like my knowings came from Satan. My knowings were evil. They were dark, that I was into magic, and these are things that I shouldn't be involved in, and, you know, it wasn't really for me. It was outside of me. So I started taking what was really coming from within me and trying to figure out a way to, not trying to figure out a way, I started believing that it was outside of me, and I started hiding it. And so it took, you know, me coming out of religion for me to get back to the awareness that this is me, this is my higher self, this is my knowing, this is who I am. And I have... And I don't know if I've shared this experience with you. I'll just give you one example if you want to say, like, am I wearing my soul?
That would be great. Okay.
Okay. I was in business, and I had to travel a lot. And we had gone to a business meeting where we had flown out, and we had spent several days doing a seminar, and we were coming back. And we were on this plane, and I've been coming and going, so I wasn't afraid of flying. Of course, the first time I got on the airplane, I was scared, but I've already been in sales and I've been traveling, so this isn't a big deal anymore. And we get on this airplane, and I'm with 3 other sales associates, and I sit down on my seat, and I'm just sitting there for a minute, and I feel the energy. Now, remember, I'm totally unaware of anything that we're talking about today.
Okay.
I'm just living my life thinking that I'm supposed to be a Christian and whatever. Okay, so I'm not included on anything to my understanding at that
point.
You're
not soul searching at that point.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so I'm like, I look over and I'm like, okay, my body starts shaking. My heart starts beating real fast. And I looked at a lady that was beside me, was one of my soul associates, and there's 2 other men with us. And I said, if we leave on this plane, we're going to die. And she looks at me and she goes, ah, you got, you know, flight jitters.
I could totally picture that.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I'm not afraid of flying. I've been flying. She goes, oh, come on, you just got a little bit of flight fright. I said, no, really. If we leave on this plane, we will die. And she's laughing at me still. And the guys are like, oh, come on, sit down, get a drink, whatever.
Right.
And I said, and I was too uncomfortable with the situation, and I knew I took my luggage back off from the top of the, you know, the overhead part.
Yeah.
I said, I'm going to go, I'm getting off, I'll catch another flight. I start taking my bags off, walking off the plane, and this announcement comes on. Ladies and gentlemen, we're having flight issues, engine issues. You're going to please have to onboard the plane, and we'll see if we can get you another flight or if we can get the plane going or whatever. And everybody starts getting off the plane, and my friends are like, oh, a little psychic intuition. Then they're like, oh, whatever.
Exactly.
So in my mind at that point, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I'm just like, I knew that if I left on that plane that I wasn't going to land, and I'm a mom of two kids at that point. I was a single parent.
Yeah.
And so in my mind, I'm like, now I'm like, okay, is that a knowing? Was that me stopping something? Is that an experience that had already occurred where in one reality I had been on that plane and it crashed and I was aware of that?
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't
going
to do it again. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I don't, I can't give you an answer on a definitive, oh, I know what it is. I just know what occurred.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was a great, that's a great example because it's, you know, kind of referencing what I was saying about the whole, you know, dying and death.
Is,
you know, our souls, from my belief, our souls know our journey. I mean, you know, intimately, they know, you know, my journey. My soul knows my journey. So if I connect with my soul, it's almost like if there's no better guide for me to go throughout the cosmos, you know, however it is life works, than to be connected with my soul, because I am very clear in this lifetime that I can be deceived. I have been deceived on several accounts, and I'm definitely doing my best to, you know, kind of tear away the belief systems that I'm aware of that make me vulnerable to deception. And one of it is arrogance, like thinking that I know that, because I truly believe, like from me, what I'm starting to learn about Judaism, I was never into Judaism, but I clearly grew up, you know, in a Jewish family, and there are dynamics that play out in the Jewish culture that as I explore my own soul and this whole journey, I'm beginning to become aware of that, you know, this whole idea of the Jews being the chosen ones is it's insidious in that it really promotes an entitlement energy. And and I am experiencing that entitlement energy as the demise to my own, what I want is often taken down because I don't believe I could be deceived. I don't believe something negative, so to speak, could happen to me. My own arrogance is my blinders. And it's interesting because I have friends that I can kind of, you know, talk with who, you know, they grew up with low self-esteem. I grew up with, you know, I didn't grow up with a high self-esteem, but if you ask people, like people have said to me who knew me in childhood going, you know, you were always such a, you know, a confident kid. And I'm like going, not inside. I didn't feel that way inside, you know, but they interpreted me as from my behaviors. And I think that's the cultural, like DNA print that Jewish people have this thing where they can just, I don't know, there's a cockiness to them. And on some level, it's almost like, you know, when I learned about the Holocaust.
Were you born?
I was
Jewish?
Raised Jewish. I have
Jewish?
Not been a, pardon?
I mean, religiously, are you like DNA Jewish?
both my parents are Jewish.
Well, I'm Jewish.
Oh, I didn't know you were Jewish.
Yes.
You were born Jewish?
I didn't know that because my mom was conceived through rape, and I didn't know my dad.
Oh,
I was
right.
In my 20s, and so I found that out. And so I always, see, that's why I said you can, this is like a trail that can go on and on forever.
Right.
So I started figuring out that the reason that I was so bought into all of this was, I would have never touched on this, is that
no,
I
that's okay.
from a past life. I had a lady that just approached me without even knowing that and told me that I was a Jewish healer in Israel in my past life and that I had been tormented because of me being a feminine energy considered doing magic in that lifetime.
Oh,
and
that's
she
interesting.
Had a clue that I didn't know who I was, and I was searching all this stuff out, and I ended up going from Christianity to kind of being like a messianic back to Judaism, to the Torah. And I was a Torah keeper. I was a head covering, long clothes wearing Torah keeper. I'm going to go back and I'm going to follow, you know, the ways of, you know, my people and the whole deal. And my
interesting.
Husband was right beside me watching me be a loon.
Well, I've had several boyfriends stand beside me and watch me be loony, whether I was into Judaism or not.
And it wasn't my place to disrupt it, so he's like, hey, I had a good time with you.
Well, you know, because it's so funny, because after I was bat mitzvahed, so technically, from a ritual standpoint, I look at that and go, the ritual was I was indoctrinated, because that's what you're, you know, all the rituals
right.
are about one thing, indoctrinating us into, it's like we're making soul contracts and we don't even know that that's what it is, you know, because my parents said to me after the bat, you know, the day after the bat mitzvah, you know, do you want to continue Jewish studies? And I was like, no, no, I'm never going back there. I did what you wanted me to do, now leave me alone. But, you know, I do believe that from an energetic point of view. Go ahead. What?
I so love that had your parents in my mindset.
Oh, yeah, well, because, you know, it's so funny. They're not very religious, but I'll be honest with you. My father is not religious. He's not a religious Jew, but that whole entitlement thing, he's Jewish through and through.
Of course. He's in the promised land.
Well, and we live in Fairfield County, I never knew how much that was influencing my life until I started listening to, by the way, my information that I'm getting from the Jews is from John Lash's work, which that's where I am right now. And
okay.
I'm finding it fascinating because I have a cockiness about me, which I get. You know, I have wonderful triggers from, you know, I'm learning humility, I'm experiencing humility and humbleness and compassion, and you know, I've been deceived. I've been deceived financially, I've been deceived in from heart, and I've been deceived from a physical body where, you know, I've lied to my body and it's shown up as diseases. I understand all that. I did not know, though, that there was a religious line in this, because since I really never was into religion, I did what I had to do to get my parents to get off my back. But I'm learning that, no, there is DNA here. And you know, and it's interesting because it's just a matter of the journey of being willing to look at our own lives from a, you know, what I would call brutally honest point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Because
it's
once you're willing to
do
that, and I'm telling you, you're doing it beautifully. I mean, I don't mind doing it publicly because I truly believe that it's almost, see, and this could be my Jewish thing. I feel like by us sharing it publicly, there is a power we get here that, from a clarity point of view, it's empowering to do it publicly, because if it changes, let's just say it touches, you know, 37 people, those 37 people are energetically helping us, you know, from an intensity point of view, to find our clarity, you know, but quantum entanglement.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, But, you know, again, this is also going back to, well, do you need the group? Can you do it alone? You know, am I with your soul? And it's why I shared at the beginning of the show, this is not a show, quote unquote, about just coming to, you know, an answer point, you know, that we get to wrap it up at the end of the show and say, okay, it's all tidy and everything's in its place, because it's not. You know, it's really just a continuing dialogue of, because one of the things that, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. We have 20 more minutes. Because I want to know what your feelings are. Right now, it seems to be, to me, it's a very transitional time. It's a time where clearly things are reaching pinnacle points of breakthrough, pinnacle points of realization. And there's an alchemy that I know you understand about those kind of pinnacle points. But it's like we seem to be in awareness of that we're in it, but, you know, we haven't, you know, the aliens haven't landed. We don't have free energy. You know, you know what I'm saying? Everything is still coming to the crescendo of being toxic and negative from a deceptive point of view. So my question is, you know, well, I guess, can you share or articulate your own experience of being in kind of this like zone where it's not quite the end, it's not quite the beginning, it's the transitional point, and how you're experiencing that?
I knew, like I think I may have said this earlier, and I'm not sure, but I knew that this was going to be my last experience in this lifetime. Like, I knew that I would not be coming back to Earth. Before I understood religion, before I understood ascension or even heard the word ascension or rapture or any of these things, I always had this knowing that this was it for me. And I've always had this, like, this life is so important. And I always felt like, well, gosh, this life is so important, but I didn't feel like what I was doing was so important. Like, I felt like I was supposed to be, and everybody, like my husband used to say to me, you just think you're somebody special, don't you? And I was like,
yes. It's a Jewish thing, you can tell him.
And my pastor, as he was losing his religion, as I was showing him that his Christian texts were very flawed, he was saying, you just feel like you're supposed to have this place of grandeur. And I'm like, it wasn't that. It's that I really understood how important this lifetime was for me and what I was supposed to do for myself. So there's no question, and that's why I said I'm not a slave. I know I'm a sovereign being. I know I'm a creator. I don't know if I created every experience. I just know that I agreed to participate in the experience. And that's the only question that I have on that. What I would say for me is that the emotions are very raw. They're very easily, I don't know if disturbed is the right word or activated or whatever. Everything is very sensitive. When I think about my relationships with the people that I'm in currently, the emotions are very sensitive because they mean so much.
Okay.
So I take that, I've had closure with relationships and been completely like, oh, man, this feels great. I know this is the way that this is supposed to go, but these are closed, done.
Yeah.
And
I have as well.
And then other ones that I'm like desperately trying to make sure that I've got every I dotted and every T crossed so that we are crystal clear before we leave. And I'm at that place now. I'm finally at that place. So I'm kind of more in the seat of observance. Like it's easier for me now to express because I've closed doors. The relationships that needed to be closed are closed. They're finished. The relationships that weren't that I have issues with, but they're still ongoing relationships. They're in a good place. They're all in a good place. With my children, my husband, my friends, my family, whatever. They're all in a very good place. One thing I'll say for me personally, and I don't know how this relates to other people, but I did have, and see, I still think that there's possible, there's potentially different outcomes because it depends on your realities. I think that, like, you'll have people set dates for things, and they'll say, oh, that date didn't work out. And I'm thinking, well, but what if it did? What if it actually
okay.
did? What if you were looking into another reality and you did have a 2012 ascension, or you did have a 1984 ascension or whatever? What if you did have these different things occur for groups of people and you were actually peering into that reality and somehow your realities got crossed because you're fractals and everything?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I think, well, you know, that's always possible. But I did have an interaction, and I have been abducted. My husband's been abducted. We've had different experiences. And one thing that I took away from, and it was very interesting because I did meet people that presented themselves as my star family, but they didn't try to make me go with them. They basically presented me with the fact that I was contracted to be in this experience, that the contract is set to expire, and that it's my choice as to whether or not I wanted to go home. But that the God being that wants to be in control and creator of all that's in this matrix would really like to keep you from that awareness, to keep you here. So that was the one thing that, again, made me question as to whether or not we pre-planned everything, because I've heard not just from one person that's presented their scenario of what was going to occur, but I keep hearing people say, well, you have to do this and you have to do that. I don't believe you have to do anything to go back home. What I do believe is you have to agree to it. I don't believe that you have to be a better person. I don't think you have to reach a certain vibration. I do think that when people say, well, it's urgent that you get their message out, if it was urgent that their message be brought out to you, there's only one reason in my belief system that that would be possible, and that's because it is a potential that, yes, you agreed to contract into this reality and experience it, but you may also face that expiration date that you could go home and you could decide not to if you're deceived.
Well,
I don't know if that's
timing.
True.
Timing. Don't you think timing is a soul related experience, as opposed to the ego wanting what it wants, and yet the timing of when things happen are kind of beyond the personality?
Yeah. Well, I think timing is huge because timing is all about where you are in your journey. It's all about what you've experienced and what you have left to experience. What
yeah, right on.
You may
That's,
want
yeah.
to continue to experience.
Yeah.
Not looking at time as in, you know, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, that thing, but just as far as...
Yeah, no,
moment,
exactly.
So.
It's not time, it's timing. It's almost time as
right.
a verb, which is
right,
really...
Yeah.
The element of motion, it's a dynamic. It's a dynamic energy. It's movement.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because
I
feel a lot of people getting caught up in time, you know. I mean, all that shit that went down with George when, you know, certain dates passed and things didn't happen and they attacked them.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I'm like, you know, I go, you for myself, I was like, you guys are all caught up in this. Because in my humble opinion, his message is spot on. So it didn't happen in 2013.
Yeah.
I think it's going to happen this year. You know, it's like, I still believe everything he said. He just got his year mixed up. Well, you know, give the guy a break. You know, what I'm saying? It's like he's bringing in some deep awarenesses here. So, you know, so time got a little messed up. That doesn't, you know, I don't shoot the messenger because of timing, even though I also don't, I don't give a shit about timing from a messenger point of view.
No, and also, yeah, and to me, what George's message, and I can say this from a truly pure heart, every single thing that he said I can resonate with, agree with, except for one thing, and it's not that I don't agree with him, and it's not that I disagree with him, it's that I don't know. I don't know if I pre-planned every experience or if I came here to experience. Okay. I'm saying that's the only thing that I'm really unsure of. I question it because it's hard for me. And there again, look at my life. I was being, molested at 4 years old, so it's hard for me to comprehend that I would choose to be a little girl molested by a grown man and have a pillow put over my head and being smothered and my oxygen cut off and all these things. If someone would tell me that I planned that, I can't comprehend that.
I understand.
It's not my knowing that. I haven't seen that as a truth. So I don't want to discredit him and saying that that's not true. I'm just saying if that's true, I'm not aware of that. I can agree I learned from the experience and I've been a teacher from it, but I can't say that I know that I planned it.
Yeah, no, I respect that. That is, and you said that, really concisely, because like you, everything George has said, I resonate with. I'm not hung up on his dates coming and going because I don't, another thing that I noticed, and I'll be honest with you, even with my own radio show when me and Janine were doing Mystical Mother Earth, you can see how the public can get caught up in simply wanting to know something new. You know what I'm saying? It's a horizontal. It's like it's a machine. They can become a just keep telling me an awareness I didn't have. And, and I'm telling you, on a weekly basis, I was like, wow, I really hope I come up with. And I would a lot of the time, but I saw what happened when I left radio, because I'll be honest with you, I have advised George personally and privately, stop doing the talks because they're addicted to him just bringing up something new, and I can appreciate it, and he's financially relying on these talks, so, I'm not about telling him not to make his money either. I'm aware of, because of my own experience in radio, that people aren't taking, they're not jumping down the rabbit hole with that awareness into their own lives.
Well,
they're
not respectful of your experience or your truth either, and that's okay, that's where they are.
Right.
But it's, the thing about it is you can't, some people are just looking for, it's kind of like if I had that come to Jesus moment. Okay, well, oh great, now I've got all the answers. Okay, now I know what I'm supposed to do. People, it's very interesting because, going back to the Jewish religion, one of the big things was their God said, you don't need a king. I'll be your God. But they said, no, we need a king. We need a leader. And he's like, fine, I'll give you a leader, and you'll see what your leader will do. They'll lead you to destruction. Of course, I see there's some truths and some faults in that because your higher self could be doing the same thing. You look, I am you. I am a creator, but you would choose to be ruled versus to follow your own intuition, to follow your own higher self. And I see that in people in general. They would be so much more comfortable if George or you or David Icke or anybody that's out there that would just be like their messiah figure that could come in and tell them this is how it's going to be, and they would just know how to go 1, 2, 3, great. Everything's good. They want
which is what they did with George, and then when his dates didn't come through, then he became sane.
Right.
The same people that were worshiping, quote unquote, him, then Satanized him because you gave us false information. It's like no, the information wasn't false. The date was off.
Did he? And this is what I would say to people that have chosen a religious path. Did someone force you, or did you choose to believe that? You chose. So when it's like I said, I listen to George and I listen to other people. I'm not really big on following other people's messages. So when somebody said, have you heard of this person? Have you heard of that person? I really haven't. I came out of religion. I listened to a little bit of David Icke and like Alex Jones, people like that. They were just like in the mainstream kind of stuff. And I really wasn't much into following, and I just stumbled across George. And that was when I had a turning point in my life to where I was like, huh, I got it. But I didn't go, George. But I did find myself mimicking his phrases. I mean, I did find myself going, and then I had to go back. I had to step back and go, wait a minute. Hello. Is this my truth or is this his truth? And I would look at my life experiences, and I would say, okay, yes, he's right. This is what, because I experienced it. I knew what
exactly.
he was saying.
Exactly. Exactly.
And so the only thing that I could ever say that I couldn't, that I disagreed with him on, again, or didn't agree with, I mean, that I couldn't disagree with him on or agree with him on, I feel like, for me personally, I feel like I'm in a creator's creation, and I'm creating as I go, and I'm experiencing it.
Yeah.
And I if I did create every step of the way, that's fantastic. I don't know that I did. I'm just saying I just don't. That's the only conflict that happened. It's just simply because nothing's been revealed to me to tell me whether I did or didn't.
Right.
So I look at all my experiences, and if somebody challenges my experiences, I don't care. That's where I don't, if somebody judges me on based on what I've experienced, I don't take it personally because I'm like, they can't understand where I am because they haven't experienced it. And I've had people judge me like that, think I'm crazy, but I really don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't care about the crazy card either. I mean, but on the same note, that doesn't mean I don't find great satisfaction when, you know, some sort of shit hits the fan and it's like, oh, yeah, I've been saying that for 10 years. I mean, like, you know, I'm not too proud to say that, yeah, I told you so. I mean, even David Icke is having his moment, you know, when they were all laughing at him 30 years ago and now he's filling stadiums. You know, it's like, you know.
Right.
For us who put ourselves out there, but, you know, on some level, you know, that's because one of the things I like about John Lash's work, and I'm with you that John Lash has, quote unquote, this thing that you can kind of join. And I don't join it because the minute joining something for me personally, I'm immediately like, it doesn't resonate as anything to join. The only thing, like I said, I'm joining is my soul. That's the only thing I consciously set an intention, and you know, like I said, it will make sense to me. I'm okay on whatever journey I have to go through. Do I have to go into the underworld? Okay, let's go. Do I have to go through hell? Okay, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
What do I need for that journey? My soul.
Right.
That for me is so I am. You know, I'm a little OCD on it. I get it, you know. Like, I don't want to miss the boat that, you know, I get distracted and, you know, because my biggest fear is that, you know, these beings, these fourth dimensional beings, these parasites, they can read my weaknesses. And my weakness has always been like the Prince Charming of the Walt Disney world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have this fear that if they really wanted me to, quote unquote, get on a ship, you know, go to another third dimensional planet so they could, you know, herd my energy, they're going to send me, you know, and they're not going to send me a Brad Pitt because that's not my, they're going to send me what I'm attracted to, and he's going to be everything I ever dreamed of. And I'm going to drop, you know, all my wisdom because, you know, that whole idea that George speaks about, they withhold love from us and then they'll give it to us, but it will be conditional love. It won't be the true love of a soulmate, you know, because like when I talk to Jeannie, Scott's mom, and she describes, I'll ask her, you know, describe a loving, just ignore that. We'll keep talking a little bit. She'll describe a loving relationship as, you know, the flowers, the holding of the hand, the gazing into each other's eyes, and, you know, all the beauty of the relationship. And I look at her and I go, you know, I'm in love with your son, but I'm not in love with your son because he's held, you know, my hand and we've had these amazing things. I'm in love with your son because we've been through hell together. You know, we went through the death of your husband when he was drinking and he was holding his, you know, he was hitting me and pushing me around and, you know, having his girlfriend come back into town, you know, on a moment's notice. We've been through that together. And I could have laughed, you know, I could have, but the truth is I continued to be attracted to him. And now to this day, now, you know, we are in a committed relationship and he's not online looking for other women and, you know, he's not drinking anymore. And I'm, you know, it's like, it's just so funny how people are like, you know, their definition of love is all the lighthearted stuff, and I'm going, no, my humble opinion, the definition of love is, have you been through hell with him? Or her?
Well,
I mean,
yeah. Definitely. Oh, yeah. I so agree. Because it's kind of like what I was alluding to, I think probably on Facebook, when people were talking about how you had to, you know, you had to get past evil. They keep talking about how the Matrix is evil and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, we have to come to some kind of conclusion, people. You know, we're all saying we're on the same page, and we'll say, okay, we created the Matrix. The Matrix serves a purpose. Good and evil they're not real. It's just an illusion in this reality, because at the core we're pure love, and we're here to experience the opposite of that. We're experiencing love that is conditional. We're experiencing the fear, the pain, the suffering, and all these things.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
Everything in my life was hunky-dory and love and, you know, butterflies and flowers and whatever. I've had that. But
yeah.
People say, well, why does the girl always go for the bad guy? Why doesn't she really want the good guy? Well, deep down, she wants the good guy. Well, it's because if you're here to experience these things, and you can't discredit them at the same time. We've got to make a decision.
No, that's a brilliant statement. That's a brilliant awareness. Yes. Thank
you.
That is.
Well, you're welcome. And my husband, when I met him, he was the complete opposite of me. I came from a lifestyle of negativity. I came from a very abusive background. He came from a background where, I mean, he wanted to be a mobster. And his dad was all like, hey, go for it and don't get caught. Do whatever you got to do. Don't get caught. We butted heads. And we were like the complete opposites, trying to change each other and get each other to be on the same page. And then we just, we have gone through love, hate, and then to an acceptance place, and then finally he realized, look, she's got to go through what she's got to go through, I've got to go through what I've got to go through.
Exactly.
My guy wants to hijack a spaceship and become, you know, Darth Vader or whatever, and I'm wanting to ascend. And we've made...
Exactly. That was great. Exactly.
And so,
exactly.
And to me, that's what unconditional love is. I mean, I can look at him and think, you're nuts. And he'll look at me later and go, no, I'm just kidding. I'm like, I don't even know what the hell you're talking about. I don't know if you're really serious, if you want to hijack a ship, if you're really going to, you know, what's the plan? Are you going to try to kidnap me because I'll kill you?
I love it.
But,
well, yeah, and there's even divine anger involved in it, because that's another thing that, you know. Well, you know, we're at the end of the show, but there was a few things we didn't get to, and you're really very good at this. You really do give good radio. Because I would love to do a show about emotional awareness.
Okay.
And I'm not saying that we didn't tap into that, because we got to tap into the fact that, you know, what I think we both shared is that there was always an awareness in our lives. We might not have had a name for it.
Right,
but,
exactly.
But there was an, you know, but I feel that a lot of people still don't understand the journey of sitting with something, you know, going after that, you know, going after what is counterintuitive, as opposed to, you know, because how many times do you see on Facebook, you know, if you're hanging around people who don't make you feel good, get rid of them. It's like, wait a minute.
Oh, I went through that phase.
Yeah. I
was trying to raise my vibrations, and I was blowing up electronics, and I was trying to meditate, and yeah.
Huh. Oh, well, that's interesting. Well, but it almost seems like, you know, that's propaganda as well, because, you know, right? Because then when the truth comes down to it, if you don't have your sea legs, if you aren't navigating through your own shadow work, you know, the truth is, in my humble opinion, that is where perseverance lies. That is the strength of the soul comes through. Actually, there was a quote I said to my friend Dennis last night, which was, a fool can learn only from a wise man, but a wise man can learn both from a fool and a wise man.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I say to people, I don't want to get rid of my triggers. Why would I get rid of my triggers? They're divinely helping me get pieces of myself back. I can't,
right.
You know, if you don't have any friction in your life, which it seems to be a lot of people are thriving for, then they're ultimately, then you're not going to, you know, where's the pearl going to come from? The pearl comes from the grain of sand in the clam, or, you know, and it's like, I think it's ignorant to even attempt to try to make a life that is sand-free. That's like, you know, it's kind of like the religious thing, trying that perfection that they're trying to, you know, reach. And so
well,
I would, you know. Yeah.
And I was going to say, well, I mean, we spent a lot of time today just, like, talking about why we are the people that we are today. But
yeah.
We didn't, when you talk about your shadow side, your dark side, we really didn't get into that. So I was explaining who I am, and you were talking to me about who you are. And so the one thing that I could say, if, you know, if we did this again, is that I'm completely okay with going into my dark side, into what is not pretty to people, but what is real. But
I love
you,
Patricia.
There, I had to kind of let people know where I'd come from first.
No, of course, of course. You know, I totally agree. And you know, well, I'm gonna pursue this. And I will, if you're open to doing another show, you know, to take it to the next step, because it almost feels you know, it's like we did the intro, and but
mm-hmm.
I, you know. I'm a meat eater. I want to get to the juice. But I get it. You,
yeah,
I mean, listen, you got to bring the dinner out. You can't serve a dinner that hasn't been put on the table. I mean, you got to serve it. So,
right.
You know, appetizer
whole,
first.
Yeah, and there's a whole lot of events that occurred after, you know, the childhood that I experienced, and what, you know, what I experienced in religion, what I experienced out of religion, how I fought trying to be this person, the fact that I was a very promiscuous person. I didn't really have morals. I had to try to find these morals and all the things that came along with that. So, you know, religion, my childhood, all that stuff was working with it until I just came to where I am today.
Oh, that.
So, I mean,
I'll be honest with you. You know, most people would go, oh, and I'm going, that is, I would love to share that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know who you are, so you know I know it will be, you know, a really powerful share. So,
okay.
And I'm even learning about you too, which like I said, I love that we held off a little on our personal connection, because this was, I heard it for the first time with the audience, which
yeah.
I think makes it really authentic. So
yeah,
you know, I'll be in touch.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I really enjoyed
it
as well. You're fantastic. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank
so are you.
Thank you. We're pretty. We give good radio. So all right, everybody. This is part one. There'll be a part two.
Okay.
Look for it on Facebook. We'll figure it all out. And thank you, everybody who supported us. Thank you, Susan, for being here, and Dennis, and Whisper Wind, and Sirius, and anybody else who's listening out there who I haven't seen. I appreciate the energy, you know, and, well, everybody, you know, just keep on keeping on, steady as we go, and until next time, I hope everybody has an amazing day. So take care, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
You've been experiencing Another Reality Show with Golden Hawk. Another Reality Show is live Thursdays 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, or listen and be enlightened anytime that works for you. Questions or comments? Email the show, goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. That's goldenhawkfeather@yahoo.com. Also, visit us on the web at www.anotherrealityshow.com. Remember, all you rule breakers, misfits, troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists, everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what is right with you. You see things others don't. You're hardwired to change the world. And unlike 9 out of 10 people, your mind is irrepressible and you were born to be a revolutionary. And here at Another Reality Show, we salute you. Stay amazing and keep on flying. Good night.